Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Bacon Expressions. Today we actually have a topic that will probably span most of the episode. I don't know, might lose some steam. Hopefully everybody binge-watched it over this weekend. We're going to be talking about Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix, a new 18-episode series, a bunch of small shorts, all animated. But before we get into that, Wes, what are you drinking?
Well, seeing as it is morning, I am going with yerba mate tea, and that's kind of where this might change to beer later on because the NCAA tournament is in the midst. So I have that going on. I have it on mute in the background. So if I do,
how much money are you going to lose in it?
This time, no money. It's pride and bragging rights. So I'm in one group with a few friends from North Carolina, and then I'm obviously, just like everyone else, or a lot of people like to do, is like they submit their brackets at ESPN, and you can track where you are, like net, like against everyone else's brackets that submits one. So right now I'm like in the 70th percentile. So I'm basically, my bracket is better than half than people out there, which
you're the George W. Bush, you know, territory.
70? Is that where he was at? Okay.
I don't know. I just remember we just joked that he was a C student.
Oh. No, this is class. No, this is class rank. This is like class rank. I'm in the top third of my class, okay? That's another way to say it.
Is that worse or better? I don't know.
I don't know. I really didn't think that through.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's going on in the background. I'm going to stay home today. The weather's been awesome here in Washington. Really, really clear and really, really hot. It was like, for here, it got up to 80 degrees a few days ago.
What? And that's fantastic.
Yeah, dude, it was, everyone was outside. Everybody. Like, even at, like, it's like nobody went to work on Wednesday. Everyone was outside.
That happens here too. Like, when there's a really nice day, everyone, all the bosses are like, it's okay if you just, like, lie to me. It was an excuse to get out of the office. It's fine.
And it's, yeah, I mean, a lot of people took, I mean, in my office, a lot of people go for walks in the middle of the day or some point when they have an opening, and almost everyone, I mean, the building was half empty at any given time because people were outside. And, yeah, you know, I had a lot of meetings and a lot of crap going on. So I was able to go outside a couple days, but not every single day, unfortunately. But now it's cooling off. We're back down to like 60, which, cause I mean, we broke records this week. Now we're back down to what our median temperature is this time of year, in the high 50s, low 60s. It's all cloudy. I can still see Seattle, though. Like, that's a sign of how clear it is for me. Like, it's cloudy, but I can still see the skyline. So it's still nice. So anyway, that's my report from over here. What are you drinking over there?
You know, I mean, I guess we're just being the same boring people here. I'm having yerba mate tea myself. I kind of started cutting down on coffee. And just trying to make it a delicious treat for the weekends, which it technically is, but I'll probably just go out and walk somewhere and get coffee at like a local coffee shop and use that excuse. But yeah, just having some yerba mate tea mixed with a little bit of lemon and ginger and then just water. So being boring. I went out and got tacos and margaritas last night. That was fun.
Have you ever had tortas?
Yeah, they got torchies out here. Do they have them out by you?
Yeah, we found my buddy turned me on to them. I didn't even know there was any of those shops because the Mexican restaurants I've tried so far have all been pretty meh. And this was like a corner, like isn't a strip mall corner shop restaurant, you know, for people grabbing lunch. And so you know, it's not really a place to sit and eat there because it's small and it's kind of a dump. It's kind of like the classic Mexican joint in Chicago where you go there to get the food and then you're probably leaving. Because you don't want to eat it there. But
Torchies out here that's kind of trendy and stuff. They took over like an old Arby's that was across the street from some nightclubs, and they like gutted it and turned it into like this kind of retro, like 50s looking place almost, and had a Torchies location here. And it's pretty good. It was a little overrated. They'd have like a line outside for a while. Like I liked it, but I'm partial, and I think it's just because Torchies was the new one in town that came out and everybody liked. But to pinche taco. Actually, it's not supposed to be called that anymore. I guess that's offensive in Spanish. It's called like whiskey, tequila, Taco or something. I forget what the real legal name is. But it went from being a food truck to a brick and mortar place. So they, you know, had to change the name. You're like, you can't have a real business name that. So anyway, those are our favorite tacos in town. And we were sitting down, we're like, man, these are such good tacos. Like, should they just cater our wedding? Like, let's ask them to cater. Like, everybody loves tacos. You know, like, yeah, that's a good, like.
who's gonna complain? And if they are, do I really want them there anyway if they don't like Mexican food?
Seriously, they have like every type of taco there. If they could like have the full menu at our wedding or whatever, it's like they used to be a food truck. Why wouldn't they be able to?
That's awesome. I had a question and I already lost it. I just noticed like everyone's kind of been in the mood for Mexican food. Not just you and me, but like other people. Like the place was packed when I went to the place for lunch this week. I wonder why. Like Mexican is all of a sudden like, moved back into, I wonder if nationally, if there's any stats on this, like, America started eating a lot more Mexican food this week.
And why? Awesome. That'd be awesome. And why? Just a little bit of warmer weather or spring just makes people think about it. Like in Colorado, it's a staple and everything, even though, like, so, Colorado's, yeah. Like, a lot of white people and everything, like, everybody here eats a lot of Mexican food. And, like, we have, like, our own little slight version of it, not really Tex-Mex. I don't know if they call it like Colorado Mex or something like that, or if there's an awful term for it, but we definitely have our own style of it, and you know, and it's freaking everywhere. Yeah. And it's amazing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well,
yeah. Tacos are awesome. Like even when we were trying to, you know, I don't know, be on a stricter diet and not have as many carbs and stuff, we're all like, yeah, but we're going to have tacos once a week. We're not going to stop doing Taco Tuesday just because of this.
No.
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, we're not fascists. What the hell? Yeah,
I mean, come on. We don't hate ourselves. This isn't punishment.
Oh, all right. Well, moving on to the topic at hand. Love, Death, and Robots premiered on Netflix not too long ago. And it is, like you were saying, it's one season of 18 shorts, ranging from like 6, 7, 8 minutes to 18 minutes. And it was a little bit unique in some ways. One, it's a bunch of shorts. Like that's usually not what Netflix has a ton of science fiction, but it's usually movies and TV shows. And this kind of format is definitely unique. And the just the level of animation is also in some of these insanely good. And
yeah.
And these are some of these are classic have classic science fiction tropes or comic graphic novel tropes. And I binged through them because it only takes, I mean, you can finish all of them in 3 hours or maybe a little over 3 hours and you're done.
It was hilarious. So I see the advertisement for it on Netflix. It's just right on the front screen because I'm sure it just like hits me, you know, like their marketing. They just know. I know they're pushing the show a lot to everyone, but they definitely like, you know, put the front screen stuff they think you'd like. So they put that up. You know, Jessie looks at it and she's all like, I was like, oh my God, I want to watch all of these. And she's like, all right, well, that'll be one of the times while I'm like out doing something with someone else. I'm like, all right, cool. That's fair. She won't want to watch all these with me. And ironically enough, like a day or so later, I just happened to get really sick and had to stay home from work, you know, and I had a perfect opportunity to binge watch it all in one sitting. So within days that I was able to do that. And you actually texted me the very next day, like, I just binge watched Love, Death, and Robots. You need to watch it. And I was like, I got that text the night before I was sick and then just, you know, happened to have to stay home and do the same.
Yep.
I was legitimately sick, but the coincidence was just fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, and the fact that you can get through it, like, in one sitting, and I mean, not a outrage.
Oh, I wasn't going anywhere anyway, so that wasn't hard.
But like, yeah, but just like for anyone else, like who wants to binge through it, it takes, I mean, I think it takes between 3 and 4 hours to get through all of it, something in there. And you won't stop. I mean, it was so easy for me to click next. Like as soon as one was over, I wanted more. So like I was sitting in front of the TV. At first I was just going to watch a few of them and then move on to something else that I wanted to do that day. And I'm like, every time one was over, I'm like, all right, one more. all right, you know what? Fuck it. I'm gonna watch all of them. So like it got to, you just don't want to stop. And
yeah.
Even
if you didn't like one that much, or all like there was enough cool ones, you're like, I want to see what else they got. Are they going to top my favorite one? Like, you know, so even if you don't like all of them, it's still, they're different enough and it's definitely intriguing. So what do you want to get any episodes that you want to bring up that you like?
All right. Yeah. Let me think. Cause, we could go in order, but that feels kind of boring. So
yeah, let's just, I mean, we could talk about what we like and then we could talk about what we didn't like and then see if we, I don't know, have a conclusion or some shit.
Well, the one thing, and I guess the one I'll pick for my first one is, and this is kind of like true of a lot of them, is the animation and the CGI in some of them, the ones that use, you know, CGI for the some of them are just like more cartoonish and more classical animation. Some of them are straight CGI and it's beautiful. It's absolutely, the CGI is so real. And yeah. I think it really got spelled out really well in The Secret War, which is the last one, 18. And it is basically about an elite unit of Red Army soldiers that are deep in Siberia, tasked with killing these demon monsters that had kind of emerged right around the time they're fighting the Second World War. So it's one of these, it's kind of like, you know, so it's combination fantasy, it's basically fantasy, but the faces of the soldiers, the sound and everything was so, it's some of the best I've ever seen. The skin, the texture of the skin, the luminescence, I mean, it was really, really impressive. And then just the, you know, it's a quick story of them dealing with this threat that emerged because they were so desperate to find a way to help beat the Nazis that they started going into these occult rituals to kind of unleash the forces of darkness, you know, and they accidentally, in one of their rituals, they screwed it up and ended up unleashing a demon horde that was not under their control. And so the Red Army is sending these groups into Siberia to try and deal with them. And that's what you're watching. And it's just it was an amazing short.
I mean, it's a fantastic concept because, you know, as much as, you know, Russia's military tactics in World War II are questionable and everything, we would have known for a fact if the Nazis would have done this, they would have just used it. So sure. In this alternate universe, it's good. They did the noble thing. They tried to close up the hole. It was great. You know, like you felt weird, oddly patriotic about it, just about humanity and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, and there was like this acknowledgement from all the characters there that they're cleaning up their country's mess, that they did this out of desperation and they're there. And a lot of them are aware, a lot of them are expecting to die. Like all the characters really don't think they're going to survive this. And they know it's kind of a suicide mission because they're out there in the middle of nowhere. They're not going to get air support or any kind of like real assistance from the main army. It's too busy on the other side of the country. And I don't know. It was just visually beautiful. The ending was pretty neat. And it was kind of this, accepting their fate and accepting their role in the grander conflict. So that's one I wanted to bring up. So let's turn it over to you for the next one, unless you have something else on this.
No, that one was awesome. I thought that one was really fun. It was a cool one to end on. And you know, the monsters were cool and the action was cool. And I always like a good, like, strategic military one that also like puts the fantasy in it, but still kind of seems like kind of pseudo realistic, you know, like that blend is nice because if it goes too far into fantasy and everything, like, you know, that, suspend disbelief and everything for reality, and it's just harder to get into it. So this had a really good balance of that on top of how like just spot on like realistic everything was. So that was definitely a cool short. Almost would like to see like a longer format of that.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a cool enough interesting concept. I like that it was like the Soviets in Siberia and it wasn't like the Americans or the Nazis, which a lot of times they you know default to and stuff. So that's definitely cool to see it from a different, completely different perspective. And yeah. Hopefully a different country's perspective of how they would handle that. So that was, I thought was unique too, which is not, and at least a lot of our Western storytelling, they might leave that part out. So another reason why I thought like Enemy at the Gates is one of my favorite war movies of all time, because it was about the Battle of Stalingrad. And even though they all spoke English for some reason, you know, it wasn't about Americans.
Well, it's not for some reason, you know, the reason the audience speaks English.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so, and then another episode, it comes out. Let me look at an episode. I'm just going to go into Lucky 13 because that's a similar one that you had told me that you liked.
Oh, yeah.
And I just figured we could bring up that one as well. I don't know if like there's really too many spoilers for any of this stuff. We could just kind of roughly talk about the concept, but this is another one that is a more realistic war movie type. It's shot in the future, and like these planes all have these AI in them, and they're just using this awesome old plane that apparently keeps on getting them back safe, and they're just this legendary crew, and it just has these awesome battle scenes, and I'm just starting to think that they have like a human-like attachment to it or something, or it actually is, you know, becoming a thing. And it just kind of reminds me of, because there's multiple times where they wanted to decommission it, and it was this low, you know, this really good tank of an aircraft, and it just reminded me of the A-10 Warthog, and like they wanted to retire it, but the crews are like, no, this is what gets us home safe all the time. We don't want to be in anything else. And that just kind of reminded me of that. And that's how the military feels about the A-10, is regardless of how obsolete it might seem, most of the battlefields it's on, it's still insanely effective and insanely safe for the people that are using it. So there's no reason to retire it, even though by all logic, we're like, we should not be using this old, like, you know, straight wing fixed plane that was designed in the 50s or some shit.
Yeah, that's the second half. The first half, Lucky 13 starts obviously the number of the designation or call number of the plane has 13s in it everywhere, and it's considered when the pilot, the main character, first gets assigned to it. She's assigned to it because she's a rookie, and they always assign rookies to the 13. And the 13 is the one where basically it's a coffin. The plane survives, but nobody else in it ever seems to survive. And that changes when this rookie takes over in its first mission. She gets everyone back okay. It's the only plane that gets back. And then after that, it just goes on a hot streak where it just keeps it fights really well. The pilot's really good, but also the plane, it just for whatever reason seems to escape harm. And it's the people, like the Marines that are carried by it, all seem like they have a better chance of surviving in Lucky 13.
They feel invincible. And, you know, they feel like these superheroes and this invincible team and everything. And it's like everything's getting upgraded around them, and they're like, no, we don't want an upgrade.
Yeah, the connection. Yeah, that's. I mean, like you were like saying, like the connection between the machine and the people, like, is what it's really about. Because there is kind of an AI in it. It doesn't speak. This is not like a sentience kind of thing. But there is an AI in there, and you're actually seeing some of it from the AI's perspective, but it's a non-speaking character. And it's just really neat how, like, it's just going like the connection, like, in most cases, like, when you talk to or hear a lot of soldiers, and there's a lot of movies about this, where they have this connection to their aircraft, like the B-17 Memphis Belle that got its crew back for 26, 25 missions, and no other plane did it. And this connection they feel to their aircraft. It's an inanimate object, but they assign, you know, feelings and personality to it. People do this with cars all the time.
And respect.
Yeah, and so, like, this one took it a step further because, yes, there's that kind of connection, but there's also an AI in it. And you kind of get this impression that, like, even though it's, like, kind of like, you know, Lexa or something, you know, it's not really given to you as a sentient AI. It seems to start to have an affection for its crew. And mm-hmm. This is one of my favorites. Lucky 13 is definitely one of my favorites out of this one. It's good.
Yeah, that was fun. And I mean, awesome realistic battles. It was super realistic, like humans, just all around, just really well done. As far as it, another kind of cool one I'd like to see in a longer format, potentially, just because of how well it was done. You know, some of them are like great little short concepts. I would pretty much just say that maybe this is just spoilers all around.
Moving from like the high realism, like military ones, one of my favorites that's in the other direction that is more of like a cartoon is Zima Blue. It's a journalist. That's the word I was trying to find. She's kind of like this art journalist. She's been trying to get an interview with this galaxy-wide famous artist who does all these murals with this blue color that he calls Zima Blue. And he's never given interviews. He's like this reclusive artist, you know, think of like Andy Warhol kind of thing, where nobody can really talk to him. He doesn't grant interviews. And when she finally does, he's kind of advanced himself, like, or enhanced himself. So he's like a lot of machine in addition to being human. He's been around for a long time. And nobody really understands the significance of the color or why it's such a draw for him and such a draw for people in general. And that's kind of like where it ends. I don't know if should we, I guess I should just full on spoil it, but maybe not. No, actually, no, I won't. But I will obviously.
Yeah, that one you should watch. That one is really cool. That one is like really interesting. It's kind of comedic, you know, in a way, even though it's like a dark comedic like twist to it. It's not serious, yet it is deep at the profound. Same time.
It's got a profound life lesson in it.
in this really awesome way, and then like, but it's like
so good.
It's done in a very silly way, but it's so well thought out that it just it does have a brilliance to it.
All right, you got do you finally remember one? Do you get a list in front of you?
Yeah, I got a list in front of me. I mean, I really like the farmer one. The farmer one with the freaking mechs. Like, it was touching. It was intense. I think it was a little bit too short and, like, serious. Like, but it was, like, at the same time, awesome. And it had a cool style of animation. It wasn't very insanely detailed, but it was really well executed. What one was that one called? Because for me, it was, like, Suits.
Yeah.
Okay, Suits. Yeah, so this one is awesome. There's like some future or whatever where there's all these farmers in some idealistic little like farming middle America setting or something. And then, but they all have these big walking robot mechs, which is just awesome. And then apparently these portals open up and these weird alien looking things, and they kind of look like xenomorphs almost a little bit, like they're ripping off xenomorphs just a little bit from Alien. And then they just have to use that to kind of protect their livestock and protect them. And you just think that there's this weird war happening between them. And that's, again, justifying why these regular people planet.
Yeah, it's they're defending defending farms from hordes of xenomorphs with mechs. It's awesome. I mean, you're right. The animation is different. It's slower. It's more of regular animation, but it's also kind of, what's it called? Low frame speed. So, and I think that's kind of trying to go with like kind of the slower, easy life on the farm and relax. And
yeah,
they're definitely like Midwestern blue collar hero type characters in it. And it does, it does definitely could have came, it could be Iowa. It definitely could be Iowa or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's, but I mean, I also wasn't like that sure that it was interpreted that way. And it could have been like that they took over our planet and these are our last strongholds.
Yeah, as the story begins, all you know is the situation. They don't tell you any of the backstory. I mean, that's how a lot of these things are. They don't waste it, and I think that's why I like sci-fi shorts. Science fiction has this tendency to want to explain things to you, and that can sometimes slow down the story, and it can sometimes really distract.
That'd be bad writing.
And it's bad, yeah. And in novels, it's kind of the biggest weakness of science fiction novel writing, where they stop telling a story and start explaining all the cool shit they made up. This one, like, none of these shorts do that, really. Maybe a little bit. Some of them do it a little bit. But Suits, you just dive right in. You're on a farm with a guy with a mech, and he's fighting xenomorphs. Like, you don't need to know why.
Yeah. This was like, all right, let's do this. Like, this is happening.
Like, if I lived on a farm and there were xenomorphs, this is probably what I would do, too. You know?
Yeah, I mean, we'd all have these things. And that's what everybody does, and it was pretty cool. So I like that one. I'd like to see more of that. And I kind of like the style of animation and stuff. It wasn't going full crazy realism and everything. I definitely like the style of it. And it definitely fit for just, you know, the tone, the characters, and the world that they build. And it has a little bit of a comedic element to it almost. But then it's also like, you know, character like dies and everything in battle. And like they make you feel feelings for a little bit. It was good.
See,
and I just fighting robots, man. Anytime that fighting robots is getting better in pop culture, I'm excited.
Exactly. Yeah, me too.
And suits, robot suits that we could wear. I mean, I wanted to propel scientists to spend more time into it.
Yes, get on it, science.
Yeah, I mean, like one thing I want to do before my die is get into an awesome exoskeleton and be able to play with it. So there's a cannon on it. Cool. I don't really care.
I could live with an axe or a chainsaw.
Yeah, you know, it just has something fun to do, you know, like a little obstacle course somewhere in the country.
Well, I'm going to go. All right. So this next one, I think it's the only one of its kind that it's not animated. It's Ice Age. where this couple moves into this new apartment, and it's the dude from that 70s show, and it's Mary
Topher Grace.
Topher Grace, and then Mary Winstead. I'm missing one of her names. She's an actress with three names, but it's Mary Winstead. And
they Parker, move, I don't know.
Once you see the show, you'll recognize her. You may not. I mean, it's one of those faces and one of those actresses that you know who she is, but it's not a name you'll remember because it's probably her real name. And most other actresses will use stage names that
are easy to remember and fun.
Yep. So anyway, they move into an apartment, and it has this really old fashioned ice box. And they open it up, and there's like it seems like there's like a mini civilization inside their antique freezer. And they watch it, and time moves really fast, obviously, because usually as science fiction, physics and lore go, the smaller things are, the more faster the storyline is. So they're watching the civilization evolve and progress. So like the industrial era and everything in the future, and they're watching this, and they're just like, and they're making commentaries like on where they are in their stages of development. And yeah, it's kind of a cool, it's also fun.
But what's great, though, is that also this has been done so many times. Like, yes. It was a Twilight Zone episode, then yep. The Simpsons did it, then South Park did it when Butters did it.
Men in Black.
And, Men in Black?
Men in Black, there's a locker at the train station.
Oh, yeah, it has its own civilization. Like, this is fantastic. I freaking love this stuff. I'm not gonna knock it by any means. I think Rick and Morty did it too. Like the civilization within a civilization, more and more. It's great. It's great. I freaking love it. And this was just like a funny one because, like, essentially what it was is like this couple is moving in, and then they see it go down, and they can't stop watching it. They don't tell anyone. They don't do anything. This is just their thing. And, like, they obviously just made this agreement, like, we're going to stop everything we're doing and watch everything go down. And, like, they get all emotionally invested into it and stuff, and it would just be cool, like, if you and your friend or you and your significant other came across it, and you just had this one really profound shared experience together of watching this go down and not sharing it with anybody else, but just being like, yeah, we're just gonna not go to work and we're just gonna see how this plays out and then go back to regular life after that. I'm wondering.
Definitely. I know. I love like how they got emotionally invested in the civilization. They couldn't talk to them. There was no exchange, but like, I mean, this is, like you said, like this has been done a bunch of times. It's not unique, but it's still cool to see. And like it to be a freezer and it to be just like this young couple moving in and like they order out for pizza so they can stay at home and watch it. And
it's exactly what anybody else would do in this situation. It was just so relatable.
They don't try to interfere. Like there's like this unspoken, almost like this unspoken realization that they cannot interfere and they're not going to try. So like they just watch.
Yeah. It's like we know what would happen in this. They kind of figured out really early on what they were seeing, you know, because it's a popular thing. And as astounded they were or whatever, like they accepted it fairly early on. And just like, well, we're just in this to see how it goes down.
Yeah, it's almost like they've seen the Twilight Zone and the Simpsons and South Park. And so they already know the premise. Like, it's like almost like a fourth or a kind of a meta little mini short here where they're aware of the premise. And they just think it's cool that they get to be a part of one. So they already know the rules.
Yeah, they already know the rules. It's great.
Right. So I think I'm looking at the others. All right, this one. This might be my favorite out of the whole season. And this is the one that's been featured like on the internet all over the place and on blogs, memes, Reddit. I mean, everyone like loved this one right from the start. And it's the second one. It's Three Robots. And it's,
for me, it was the first. They had different orders for different people.
Yeah. They changed the order. Nobody knows. Well, I guess they now know an answer why, but be that as it may, since this is an anthology, like the order really doesn't like, to me, just doesn't really matter. Yeah. It's an anthology. They're not connected. So it doesn't matter.
But the controversy is connected to something else that we'll bring up later.
All right. So, but yeah, I'll just read this straight from the thing. Long after the fall of humanity, three robots embark on a sightseeing tour of a post-apocalyptic city. So they are robots like that we built before humanity destroyed itself or whatever. Like they actually discuss like all the different varying ideas of how humanity, because they're not really sure how humanity ruined it. But like they're hysterical. Like, the three are fucking hysterical, and just, like, their lack of, like, awareness of, like, what happened before, and they're, like, just, they're observing humanity as if this is the first, like, they don't really know much about humans, and they're going through this old, like, this broken down apocalyptic city, trying to, like, almost like tourists, you know, like they don't, like taking yeah. pictures, like, if we're going to Europe, it's like, oh, that's a nice castle, I wonder who built it, I don't know. Like, so it's like, it is like a total tourist conversation.
And they're like, great. Who designed them, or who was their, like, I don't know, remember designer, what word they used. Yeah, who was their designer or something like that. And then, you know, there was no answer to that. It's like, you know, short answer, they were made in a soup.
Yes.
Or something like that. But it was pretty cool. It was really funny. And I mean, one of the characters was a big metronome, and I guess they knew the most about humanity, but they were still just like had access to a database and was still interpreting it with their own mind and their own concept. So it wasn't perfect or spot on. Like, they were an expert. They were like still, like, you know, just trying to deduce stuff from their robot point of view.
Yeah. And then and this is the first episode. There's a few episodes that feature cats. This is the yes. first one that does.
And cats great. Are a reoccurring theme, you know, like yes. this has an internet-based audience, and the internet loves cats. I think it was a smart move by a lot of these to include cats.
Yeah, definitely a lot of awareness, because the robots, they are aware, or they know just from what they've gathered, that humans were obsessed with cats.
And they from don't... Eternally documented on the internet yeah. how much we're obsessed with cats. Like, half the internet is cats.
And they're and the three robots are speculating as to why we were so, like, so it's just great. It's probably my favorite episode. I think it's a lot of people's favorites, and it is definitely, I mean, just this whole, if you're going to watch just one, and I don't think anyone ever is going to do that, but if for whatever reason you decided to be cruel to yourself and only watch one episode, this would be the one I'd give to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Because this will make you want to watch the rest, you know, because it's fun. Like, and that's why, like, for me, it being the first one, that definitely works. Now, was there any ones that was a little bit more serious? Do we want to get into maybe what we didn't like? Let me kind of look over this. Beyond the Aquilinear Rift. Oh, When the Yogurt Took Over.
Yeah, that one's a real short one.
When the Yogurt Took Over was freaking great, because it had this really stupid concept that the yogurt became sentient and took over and is now, like, in political power. And you're like, wait a second, what? How does that happen? And then they go through this weird path of logic, and you're like, oh, wow, this is actually pretty, like, funny. It could be like a little children's book or something like that. A creepy children's book, but definitely a children's book. Like, in the format, the animation, everything surrounding it. So that one was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Likewise, as far as just the comedic ones go. And it's a funny little sci-fi element, like, just thinking about some yogurt being genetically engineered that became sentient, you know, and, you know, it's like almost like an AI or something, and can start solving humanity's problems and uses it to take over. Mm. And humanity just agrees.
Yeah.
Like, and why not? Like, anything that became sentient like that, that could solve all of our problems and agreed to keep on doing it in exchange for his power and stuff, you could see potentially happening. They just use yogurt as the, you know, dumb base of it and stuff. But at the end of it, it's like, oh, no, all that logic is sound, though. That's how it would go down. played the political game right. The yogurt got in power. Okay, by the end of it, it all makes sense. It's not that ridiculous.
No, like, it's basically the yogurt demonstrated its super intelligent abilities, and it was just undeniable that it knew how to run things better than us. So at that point, like, we just handed it over.
And honestly, I do think part of humanity, with, like, a lot of humanity, really just wants that. Like, if one person could be in charge and it was undeniably way better, or one thing concept was in charge and it was undeniably way better, everyone's down to just give up and relinquish to it.
It's explored in a few sci-fi stories where, instead of yogurt, it's usually an AI or something, and it's basically handing over public policy or government to an AI rather than people. Basically, the end of democracy. And they've kind of played around a number of, I don't know how many novels have, but I know a lot of short stories and a few TV shows have kind of poked around with that idea. And, it is kind of one of those far future things where they kind of ask the question, like, could we really, you know, hand over hand over decisions to an AI. And it's already being, I mean, it's already a, you know, discussion now with the military, because we've already have semi-autonomous weapons. Like, are we willing to give over the decision to kill something to a machine instead of a pilot or an operator pressing, you know, the target button or the execute button? So it's a, that's, I mean, it's yogurt in this case, and it's more fun, you know, it's funny kind of
in a lot of ways,
fun. but it's fun.
but this would be a great way to teach a complex concept to kids. You know, that, like, because this might be a decision that they have to make.
Because it's fun.
You know, I don't think we'll have to make this decision, but I think kids should start being shown this now because they might have to.
Or they
might have to teach their kids how to make that decision.
Yeah, and or it might make you just, you know, go into the fridge and open up a yogurt and just start just yelling at, tell me what you know. Like, what are you doing?
Solve my math problem.
I want in. When you take over the world, I want in. I'll be one of your lackeys or a henchman. All right, I think that's, like, out of my favorites and all the really cool ones, I think that's the last of them. I think, well, Alternate Histories is another one where it's basically an advertisement for a simulator that shows you what happens in history if you change one event. And they said, well, obviously the most popular one is what happens if Hitler's dead. And they show you, they go through like 7 or 8 timelines of all the different, based on different scenarios of how Hitler dies, you know, hit by a car or something like this. Like, and they get crazy, and it's like, this one's like pure comedy, and it's a multiverse based idea. And it's just, it's just funny. It's short. It's 8 minutes, and I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool, but it's, I mean, there's not much to it. It's just mostly a, you know, what if all the funny ways we can kill Hitler kind of joke. And, I don't know.
I mean, I think that's always fun. That's fun. That's a fun thinking experiment, you know, like whenever we get time travel, like,
so that,
not that maybe that's a good thing that we should do, but like, we should all have that discussion.
Yeah, we don't really.
Another thing, these are all good topics everyone should be familiar with, or most of these are good topics people should be familiar with, so we have these discussions in the future by a bunch of people that have never heard about it before, you know, and we could be easily swayed. Like, I think that's why sci-fi, especially like this generation of people, really needs to start everybody thinking these questions, because it won't be long before we might actually, society's faced with these decisions.
Yeah, and actually that's a pretty good segue, because there's a number of these stories that don't do that. They're kind of like just more of pulp kind of science fiction, if you want to call it that, or, you know, something just that's visually, you know, appealing and doesn't really have a point. Like, some of the, I mean, we just mentioned, like, some of these don't really have, like, a serious theme. They're kind of a repeat of an existing one, or maybe, but some of them obviously are much more profound. We've already talked about them. But I think what's really was missing from the ones that are not, because, and maybe we should go ahead and say, maybe we didn't say at the beginning, but not all of these are good. Some of these are bad. And we decided to go through our favorites first, because we wanted to do the compliment sandwich.
And yeah.
So I think we've basically, I think I've used up all the ones I really liked. Like, the rest of the ones we haven't are either mediocre or just terrible. Or just, you know, but maybe we can spend a little time on that. And I don't want to bash it for 15 minutes, but.
I really don't want it to for too long either. But I think it bears to mention that, and who were the main writers of this again?
Tim Miller and David Fincher.
Tim Miller and David Fincher. I mean, I think they just made a really big blunder in a lot of these. It's just kind of obvious there wasn't like a female writer in the room, and a lot of these are just kind of written from a male fantasy perspective and are just really tone deaf for 2019. And kind of some of the negative things about the gamer culture, or like, you know, maybe some of the nerd culture and stuff, and the online culture that's negative towards women or objectifies women, or, you know, like just keeps them one dimensional and as objects and stuff. A lot of these are guilty of, you know, and they really should have done better. And I don't want to demonize them too much for it. I just think it was tone deaf, and they should have had like some female writers in the room. And in 2019, I think that's the big lesson that everybody should be learning, is like, we should have the female perspective in the room and not just be tone deaf men all the time with all of our content and all the stuff that we put out there. And there's definitely some standouts here that did that. And you could read plenty of stuff online, that goes over this, because there's definitely been criticism about it, and I think most of it's justified. I think a lot of the people that are upset about it are completely justified with it, and it was tone deaf. And if this gets rebooted, hopefully it's done better. If it's allowed to be rebooted, I don't know if it's enough to kind of like stop this project from repeating itself, or if they just do a good job to embrace it and they don't fight it too much.
Yeah, I'm looking through while you were talking to see if I could get any real kind of idea of where some of the ones that were weaker, because I checked the writers, and it looks like there was only possibly one female writer, and her credit was for the When the Yogurt Took Over episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at some of the others that were clearly that were problematic, and it looks like one particular writer was responsible for a good number of them. But I basically, the writers are John Scalzi. I know him. John Scalzi and Alistair Reynolds and Peter Hamilton. These are all science fiction writers. Marco Kluse. All right, that makes sense. Okay, so some of these things that are full-on science fiction that feel like you've seen it before, I guarantee you those were written by science fiction novelists, John Scalzi, Alistair Reynolds, Peter F. Hamilton. And then the ones that were kind of more weird, or more what you were saying, like basically male fantasy kind of trips, were probably written by this other guy. So it's – anyway, all that to say, there was a large group of writers, but obviously Tim Miller was at the helm, and he brought in some people to make a few to contribute. So this is an anthology in the sense that it is like more than just one person writing them all. But there was obviously one kind of – I guess you'd call him the
– A curator.
Curator. You know? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So
definitely, hopefully they take the criticism like correctly and they improve it and stuff. Because one of them was just like violence against like women porn, unnecessary nudity and stuff, and had one little twist at the end that just like didn't justify like what the whole thing was. And the one like criticism that I have about this, like whenever it's done, like nowadays, like it definitely deserves its criticism and people should, you know, be pointing it out and we should be doing better. But when it comes to this, like I just know how many thousands and thousands and thousands of man hours it does this to, whether it's like the nudity or just like, you know, to go into this type of animation and stuff. And it's like really somebody in the room at some point should have like said something. I feel like, and that's what I just kind of think sometimes. And I know sometimes you can't because it's your job and it's a good job and like it's not your place to do it or something. But like just, you know, and especially with anybody reading the news and just being, you know, in Hollywood right now in 2019, like, you know, somebody in the room should have said something, because this is also coming from the industry where it's like at the forefront. It's right at the front of this.
Well, in this realm where a lot of these stories come from, and a lot of these people, probably the companies they work for, I mean, they've been producing these types of things for a long time.
Yeah.
The animators, I'm sure. I mean, you don't get this good without having a lot of other experience and credit. So they've been doing this, and obviously they don't have a role in the creative output.
I guess you're also right too. I mean, video games are still kind of guilty of this too a little bit and get criticized for it. There's a lot of other content. It just happens to be in like Netflix, where people that aren't used to this style or maybe digesting it and putting in their two cents.
No, and this I think this got directed to us because Netflix is aware of our watching habits. I don't think this was directed at everyone, because I did notice that its rating on IMDb is 9. That's extremely high. And that suggests to me that this thing was handpicking its recipients to watch and to promote it to. And I think – so I don't think this was a mass release. I think actually Netflix is trying to target, and these things do appeal to an audience for better or worse.
Yeah.
And so I don't think they're going to get the feedback that you're talking about. That's what's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, you might be right. You might be right about this. And a lot of people in the gamer culture and stuff like that don't really see this, because it's still really deep in the gamer culture, like, you know, the objectification of animated women and the one-dimensional writing and stuff. And even in, like, you know, some of the anime and other stuff like that, it's just kind of an accepted part of a lot of the genres.
Yeah, I don't think they were really I mean, most of these stories, like, I don't think they're really trying to push boundaries in terms of the narrative or storytelling. I think, like, well, I mean, they are, I guess they are. The one thing they are doing is they're trying to push the boundaries on what you can show on an animated short on Netflix. And they kept saying, as part of the description of the show, they have NSFW anthology. which is kind of amusing to me because I wasn't aware that people watch Netflix at work. I guess they do, but this is not the only one. This is not the only anthology that is not safe for work. The only difference is it's animated. Like Black Mirror has violence and nudity. A bunch of other shit on Netflix has violence and nudity. The only difference is that this is using animation tools to do it. But even that is not so unusual because there's a whole subgenre of porn about hentai that's about this, that one of these episodes was very similar to. So I don't really see this, to your point, like, you're right. They basically are just kind of messing around with, like, boundaries of what they can show visually, but it's kind of
One of the ones which could have been a, like, cooler episode, but, like, used, like, rape as, like, a big part, like, a gang rape as a big part of it, like, of the storyline or something, and it was just used really horribly in a really tone-deaf way, like, just not correct. You could tell another one. I doubt there was a female writer in the room there, you know, and, like, just maybe if it was in the middle of a video game or something, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal and that noticeable or something because, you know, it just gets lost there. But here it was just like as soon as like it started, I was all like, I just kind of cringed. So it was definitely cringeworthy moments for a lot of these and stuff. And it's just, you know, maybe with just this type of like more mass release, they should think about that. But you're right, maybe they won't.
Yeah, there's just a... Like, the one you're talking about is Sunny's Edge, and, like, it's based on a sci-fi short story, but obviously this thing's been rerouted differently. I was cringing for most of this episode, because it was just straight up, like, late-night, ultra-violence, like, a combination of violence and sexuality, and rape, basically, is what it was going for. And then it was a cyberpunk kind of feel to it. So I don't know what exactly that they thought they were going to get across, but they didn't. It was just creepy. And the twist at the end, fine. It was all right, but it didn't save it.
I think they tried to save it. They tried to think that they were being progressive and still being edgy, and they just weren't. No. You know, they didn't save it the way they thought they would. Like with the other one, what was the other one where the woman's getting chased naked the entire time for some reason?
The Witness number three.
The Witness. Yeah,
pointless.
Yeah, pointless. And it's weird because the cinematography of the chase scene and stuff like that and the city and everything was beautiful. Like, she just didn't need to be, like, nude the whole time. It didn't need to have the subject matter it did. But there was a lot of, like, awesome time spent on it, which is just really unfortunate that it was, like, that's what the subject was. Yeah. Because, you know, this is another one where it's, like, cool, it was well done, but, like, that was it. Bullshit,
It seems like with a few of these episodes, I didn't read the article, so I shouldn't do this, but I think this was one of the things they did want to demonstrate what this kind of animation can do. And sadly, I think one of the things that they were trying to go for is to demonstrate how realistic they can do genitalia. I mean, if that's all you were going for, but they were trying to fit all these science fiction themes in there. And with a lot of these episodes, they succeeded. But mm-hmm. with a few of them, it seems like they're trying to basically show how good they can show, body gore, like blood, mm-hmm. guts, and everything. They want to show how messed up they can do that, and they wanted to show how realistic they can do a female nude body. And if that honestly was one of the main objectives of this thing, then that's just stupid. And they should really give up on that in the next season, because those Sunny's Edge, the first one we talked about, the rape related one, is just disturbing. Mm-hmm. Witness is pointless. The one where the woman's running around the city naked from somebody. And then there's another one, Good Hunting, which is it's not CGI, it's more of like Japanese animation style story about a spirit hunter who forms a bond with a shapeshifter woman who, for whatever reason, is just, you know, naked for almost the entire episode. Just
over-sexualized and naked.
Yeah, for no reason. Just naked. You know, like they're sitting there having tea around a fire, and it's like, you know what? No, it would make this scene better if she was topless. It had no relevance to the story whatsoever. It was by definition gratuitous. So basically a guy running around being chased by a garbage monster with his dick hanging out. And that's, I mean, a pointless story.
That's kind of fun. What do you say like that, though? You kind of want to see it, right? This is this guy getting chased with a garbage monster with his freaking dick out. Like, all right, that one sounds hilarious. What happens there? It's not that good.
No, it's funny when it's a guy, huh? So I think.
Well, I mean, that is definitely one argument and stuff, you know, from the female community is like, where are the dicks? Yeah. Like, why is that just two rated X or whatever?
Yeah, well, this one is.
So they tried. So that's an attempt in that direction, but still, it fell short in so many other ways that it's not really a big win. But I don't want to bash too much. Just the ones that were bad were just definitely noteworthy of, like, why they were bad and tone deaf and, like, why they should be called out. But I think the ones that were good, like, we love the genre and we like to still keep seeing it go forward. But we definitely like to see it forward in a better way with more thought put into it is pretty much our criticism, I think.
Yeah, there's about – out of the 18, I think there are four that have, like, you know, the gratuitous nudity factor. And there's maybe five that I would, you know – I mean, I do say watch them all, but there's five that are pretty weak out of 18, though. So there's there's 13 that are pretty cool. And there's – out of the 13, I think 7 or 8 of them are awesome. So this, on the balance, this is a really good anthology. And I just want to say, like, just my takeaway from this is the first thing is the format. It's a short. They're like 6 to 18 minutes. I think that's a really cool format that nobody really, that they're out there, but nobody really tries to push them that hard because you can't really justify charging a lot of money for a short.
So whenever me and Jesse go to, like, the Denver Film Festival here, we pretty much always see, like, the animated short one because that's one of the funnest ones to go to, and you don't get stuck sitting through, you know, a horrible indie movie, which at a film festival, like, we watch the preview to look into it. It's like, all right, I'm pretty sure these will be cool. And then, like, no matter what the short one is, you could just go into it and it'll be fun. So, like, I've been checking them out more recently, but that's kind of just a, like, highbrow film festival format for, like, things that have won and been entered in these like, you know, judge contests and stuff. So I'm like, it's cool that it came out in this way, and I'd like to keep on seeing it done this way because it's definitely fun. It's a fun binge. I definitely, like, we'd go to the theater, have drinks at the independent theater and popcorn and just binge these, like, animated shorts that won all these awards. And it's just like, some are weird, some are like, wait, like, I see why that won. Other reasons are like, oh, I bet this won at Paris.
Yeah, so, like, this is a, like, I love this idea of putting together 15 to 20 shorts. I mean, that ends up equaling about 3 to 4 hours. So depending on what you want to do, like, if you want to do something movie length, you know, you probably cut it down to 12 or 13 of them. If you want to do something really quick, just to have, you know, an introductory kind of preview trailer kind of thing, you can just do 2 or 3 of them before a movie. Like, there's, to me, like, you can't, the thing is, I guess you can't, most people just think you can't make any money doing this. But, like, some of this stuff is really cool, and if you can, they didn't deploy it or execute it the right way some of the time, but when they did do it properly, like, you know, in the Secret War, you know, the one in Siberia, I mean, it's just amazing. It's visually amazing. And those are the things I'm excited about this show. Yes, I do think some of them were kind of written for the wrong reasons, but, like, out of 18, like, 13 or 14 of them are definitely worth seeing.
You know what, and considering a lot of the, you know, stuff that comes out of the gamer culture and everything, when they're not necessarily under that microscope and stuff, like, all in all, it was pretty well done. I mean, and I do like the shorts too. I like sitting down and binging a bunch of weird different things, and then it just kind of gets your mind moving in all these different directions, and you have no idea what the next one's going to be. It's definitely good for ADHD. Come on, this is what our generation is all about, media ADHD.
Yeah, and these things don't take – I mean, they obviously don't take as long to develop and produce. You know, so the money, you know, the investment is lower. The time is lower. You could put these together quicker. And especially if you have multiple writers and multiple sources, I mean, you can put together something like this. I mean, this is basically what science fiction does a lot of the time when they collect short stories and do kind of like the best short stories of 2018. Like the best science fiction of 2018. That's what sci-fi and fantasy has, and a lot of genres, I think, more broadly, have been doing for a while. They like to collect some of these shorter works that authors do. That is really like what a lot of authors do in general. Most authors, I think, do that instead of novels.
Well, and how many times do we see a cool concept or hear about a cool concept that we'd love to see done visually, but we know like it would have to reach such a broad audience to justify a big budget TV show or movie in order to show those concepts, and being able to do this small little ideas done animated and stuff so we could keep on exploring these sci-fi concepts in the most limitless realm there is, CG. You know, like, that's why this is perfect. So if we keep on having these shorts that are sci-fi related coming out, we'll keep on getting to see these cool ideas visualized, which is really hard in the sci-fi genre because it has to be huge and popular before we really get a good visual representation of any of this stuff.
In the other...
And maybe graphic novels are, like, the best things of people having, like, smaller ideas that could, like, be shown visually. But that's still a high production and undertaking as well. So, like, there's – it's cool that there's more of this.
Well, there's – yeah, like, you were – like, with graphic novels and, like, Banjin, a lot of things that come out of Japan, like, they have not been – when they try to make them into movies, they fail. And – but that doesn't – everyone gets – the fans are so frustrated because they're, like – this is really good. Why did you give this to people who obviously don't understand it and make, had them do a movie about it? I mean, my big example is Ghost in the Shell, which I thought the cartoon, like on Adult Swim, is freaking awesome. It's so cool to look at. And then the movie was
terrible. To new listeners out there, we have like unintentional 10 minutes just bashing anime. We're not particular fans. So anything we like in the genre, if we say positive, that's high praise from either of us. Not that we know much about the genre.
Well, the point being, like, we don't do well in converting it into movies and TV shows. Like, it's, it hasn't, and I think that's the reason a lot of these ideas don't get a lot of play and don't get shown much in big movies. Plus, you know, we're obsessed with superheroes and Star Wars right now. You know, if it doesn't involve lightsabers or, you know, a guy in a costume or a woman in a costume, we don't really put a lot of money into it or time into it or really care for it in terms of movies and TV. So that's, I mean, that's just where we are in the U.S. And I think this is a cool, like, backdoor way to demo, to show some of these things, these other things that are not being developed and produced very well at the movie and TV level, you know, TV show level, like an hour, you know, drama on HBO or whatever. I mean, just think about like Game of Thrones, for example. Like they were ready to pull the plug on Game of Thrones after the pilot was first made, because the first pilot was terrible. Like even the people that love Game of Thrones, when they saw it, they did a viewing of it. The first thing they told the creator was, "You're in trouble," and so they ended up redoing it. And now Game of Thrones is like one of the biggest things ever. But you know, if you would have told somebody. If you would have pitched Game of Thrones to somebody before that, they probably would have said, yeah, that's going to be a cool thing that only a few people are going to watch, you know, that are obsessed with, you know, dragons and shit. So it's really amazing, like, if you do it right, you know, that these things can take off. But if you do it poorly, like Ghost in the Shell or like a lot of these other movies based on graphic novels, yeah, you can sour everyone on the idea.
I mean, I tell you firsthand, like, at my job, like, Game of Thrones is something that is universally liked through every sort of demographic, age demographic, gender, race, from anywhere in the country. You know, we're kind of like a melting pot, like at our office and everything. And Game of Thrones is universally loved. I didn't realize it as much. Like, I knew like a lot of people that I knew were into it, and I kind of knew that it was like crossed a lot of more boundaries than like even I think Lord of the Rings kind of did. But I definitely saw it when I started to go at work. I was like, man, and I'm like the only one who doesn't watch it.
You know, if you committed to trying to catch up, man, I would watch them simultaneously with you, because I'd love to rewatch like the old seasons again and see where everything started. Because a lot of this, people have grown up, like the characters, the actors and actresses have grown up on the show. And the characters are growing up as well. So they age the characters in the story as well to match with the actor. So it's really, it's pretty fucking cool on that front. And then everyone has a favorite. There's so many characters and there's like one big storyline, but there's also like seven or eight sub storylines. Everyone has their favorite. Everyone has a favorite character. They're so well developed, so well written. You're going to find a favorite. And I think that's why it does so well. And plus, yeah, the dragons are pretty fucking cool, but it takes two seasons for you to actually see them, like a real full size one. They're actually little just lizard things for, you know, they grow up, they're born on the show. and grow up. Yeah. So like, it's another thing that like you growing, like the show grows with you. And I think that's why like in dramas that do that, like Sopranos did that, where you're evolving, in a very real way of these characters to do that, you know, effectively, is obviously not easy to do because only a handful of shows have done it in the last 20 years. But Game of Thrones is just, it's so well done. There's definitely some boring episodes, and there's definitely some like time they spend built developing things like the setting or a character, and nothing really happens. And that is kind of a something that fans endure because they know the next episode could be badass. And that's how they do it, man. That's how they keep you sucked in. They're like, yeah, yeah, these last two episodes were kind of boring, but we think you should watch this third one. And we all know because that's what they do. Like in episode three, shit goes down. Like, so they're very good at it. Like they keep you. So anyway, if you wanted to like binge and start catching up, dude, I'd watch it. I'd watch it over here and with you. And like, I'm not spoiling a damn thing, but I'd be kind of curious to see how you and Jesse would interpret what's going on in the show with me knowing what happens, and then see how you guys see how you guys read into it. Cause I'd be curious to do that too.
All right. Well, I mean, it's funny. She's good at picking up on stuff that I don't even pick up for movies. I think I'm this really experienced like movie and TV watcher and spent way too much time. And then there's something that happens within the first 5 minutes that foreshadows it. And she catches it like almost every time. I'm like, what the fuck? She's like, or maybe that's not what happens. Maybe it's not that. Like, oh, it probably is. You just called the movie in the first 5 minutes.
Well, this would be some of the events in Game of Thrones would be a good test for her because
let's do it.
The show shocked audiences.
You know, the Masked Singer, like, which just swept over America, which is absolutely enchanting, and everybody out there listening should watch the Masked Singer if they're not. Came from Korea. Ken Young was like, "We need to do this in America. This is awesome," and yeah, it's freaking fantastic. The Masked Singer is awesome. It's the dumbest TV show ever, and you just love to watch it. It's great. It's great.
Where the hell did that come from?
The Masked Singer, because Jesse called The Masked Singer, which was one of the hardest ones. It was T-Pain without auto-tune. Who calls that?
Wow.
Yeah, like she called like two other ones, Ricky Lake and I forget the other one, but out of like, I don't know, 8 or 12 people or something, she called a couple of them. Like, that was pretty ridiculous. And the top one, which very few did, and she called a couple episodes in. Because you didn't find out who he was until the very end and stuff. And she's like, you know, was pretty committed to it. So with that, testing her skills with this, I'm always down to do it. Because the second that show came out, she has the uncanny ability of, you know, being able to recognize voice actors even when they change their voice. So like there's like a show came out to test it. So we had to watch it and she succeeded. I'm down with this. Let's see if she can call this shit. This stuff is like complicated, apparently. And there's a lot of characters. We've got to keep her on her toes.
It's not so much the complexity, but there is the complexity. But the show has shocked its audience several times with things that nobody saw coming. So it has tricked and like talk about twists. Like Game of Thrones has managed to deliver a few that nobody saw coming, unless. I mean, the people who read the books are very like cool about not discussing what happens in the books, and then eventually the show deviates from the books so much that you can't really divine anything from the. You don't really spoil anything if you read them, but like they're really really good, and the readers of the series were all very good about keeping quiet. And just, you know, kind of, I never,
it's like if you're none a fan, there was this unspoken respect. Like if you had spent the time to read all those things, like you're not just going to be a douchebag and just go out and spoil.
Yeah.
Like those guys used to with the Harry Potter books.
Yeah, there was that. And then I forget if it was a TV show or a movie, but like this kid, somebody was like really annoying him and then started talking about Sixth Sense. And this one guy was just like, oh, fuck, you know what? Bruce Willis is really dead. The whole movie, he's dead. All right, and like the reaction of everyone in the room is like, oh my dude, you asshole, like that was totally uncalled for. It's like he could have stabbed the guy and they would have been less upset, but like they were really like, dude, you ruined Sixth Sense for him. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Who does that?
You're a monster.
You're a monster.
You're uninvited to my wedding. Fuck you.
Oh, it's like someone who does it like with like any of those like classic childhood books where the dog dies at the end. I won't even mention any names of the books so I don't ruin it for people. But it happens in a bunch of like random coming of age books that we're all forced to read as kids, and then the dog dies at the end. I was like, wait, what the fuck?
You made me read this. I hate you.
But honestly, it's a safe bet if you're reading a book about a boy and his relationship with his dog, the dog is gonna fucking die, all right? Yeah. Like, the boy's gonna grow up and the dog's die. That's what happens. So just, I spoiled every book with a dog.
Well,
that's the format.
Well, luckily no kids listen to this show, so we spoiled it for people that already know, so we're good.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of adults that never read that shit because they were, I don't know.
Well, I think we're a little bit past an hour now, so we can cut it here in some weird and awkward way. Go watch Love, Death, and Robots. It's uneven, so don't judge it by the first episode.
Yeah, and give us your opinions and what you think. That'd be really interesting.
Yeah, and I do hope they make more. I do hope maybe they try a little bit harder on some of this stuff. But yeah, it's awesome. And let's see what's coming up. We just mentioned it. The final season of Game of Thrones begins in a couple weeks. Captain Marvel just came out. I saw it. If you're a fan of the Avengers, you have to see it, and you'll enjoy it. It's not that great. It's honestly by itself not that great of a movie, but it's got so many connections to the rest of this that you need to see it. You get to see Nick Fury's kind of origin story in a way, and like it's just cool to see and to see Samuel Jackson de-aged like that back in the 90s, and they have a lot of like 90s nostalgia shit in there because, you know,
yes.
Oh man, it's just it's for people. I think like a lot of it's aimed at people our age because we're the children of the 90s are definitely going to get a lot more out of this movie than millennials, I think. Mm-hmm. But still enough to see. Us came out this weekend. I haven't seen it yet, the new Jordan Peele movie.
I think I'm going to see it. Jesse probably won't see it with me if it's as scary as it's supposed to be, but I really want to see this one.
I'm going to watch Get Out and Us next to each other.
Yeah, back to back.
And Captive State was another movie that came out that did not get a lot of attention because it's an alien invasion rebellion kind of story that's been done 4,000 times, and it seems, at least from what I've read so far, this one doesn't really deserve any additional attention because they kind of just copy off everyone else. I think that's about it. Like, there's really, I don't watch trailers anymore, so we won't talk any new trailers. I don't think we've ever done that in our show, though. I don't think we've ever talked about new trailers because that seems, I don't know, seems wrong. Like, oh my God, you see the new Avengers trailer. Like, yeah, so what? Like, do you really want to talk about it? Like,
seriously.
Not really.
Seriously. If they're purposely trying to mislead us, that's cool, but I still don't want to watch the trailer anyway, because then I'm going to try and look into it deeper and deeper, and I'm still going to know more than I need to. And I think it's better if I don't. Like, the last one really got it interesting. It really did. The whole saga being brought together, I think that's why I'm going to go see Captain Marvel and rewatch all the different Marvel movies because of how they've been tying everything together and making this all pull in together. So even if none of them stand on as like, you know, an A++ movie to me, the way that they've been pulling all these movies together in this franchise is completely unprecedented.
Oh,
this is incredible.
And here, another thing I'll say real quick, it is worth watching just for the homage they give to Stan Lee, because this is the last, I believe this is the last movie where he did his own cameo.
Oh wow!
I think they're going to CGI. I've heard that they're going to CGI him into all of them henceforth. But
so he still gets to do his cameo,
dude. Not only does he do a cameo, the cameo itself is just really, really just on the ball.
That's like tight. That's powerful.
God, wow. Do they know what they're doing? They are just so good at this.
That's why they need to quit while they're ahead, and that pisses us all off.